let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. Sheldon Green is a San Francisco Bay Area lawyer. Sheldon's legal background includes high-impact public interest litigation, alternative energy, and credit unions. An accomplished business executive, an early stint as a bureaucrat, he also sings bass in the Oakland Symphony Chorus. And he's the author of 7 well-received novels, including his latest, Lost and Found. One review saying it belongs on the same bookshelf with the Spoon River Anthology and with Mark Twain's stories about growing up along the Mississippi River. A Holocaust survivor chooses between life in a small western Pennsylvania town and reparations in Israel. Gentle, funny, poignant, and magical, the book celebrates the small miracles of ordinary life. Sheldon Green, called a born storyteller by the Los Angeles Times Book Review, author of Lost and Found, joining us on This Week in America. Sheldon, welcome to the program. A delight to have you with us.
Thanks. So good to be here.
What great reviews for Lost and Found. I wanted to do something just in sort of a sentence or two to set the stage for this, but tell us a little bit more about Lost and Found and this story that's touching so many people.
Sure. The novel has an interesting format in terms of it's dealing with a series of sequences. The narrator, as you saw, is a Holocaust survivor, and he comes to this town in the late World War II, and he grows up there and at the same time has ultimately becomes the administrator of the synagogue. And in the context of that, he has an opportunity to observe all of the goings-on in the town. And so there are these episodes, which are obviously things he has observed, which create a composite in the town so that you have an opportunity to see what the town is like and what the people are like. And is that's essentially the format. And there are a number of very diverse elements of it. You know, they range from the people not able to figure out how to formulate a particular cookbook that they're preparing because nobody can agree on the recipes, and a conflict with the a Pentecostal church that's next door that over a parking lot. And one of the most controversial issues is a family that goes to Europe on a vacation, and they get stuck in a rainstorm, end up overnight in an inn, and the next morning they find out that the inn is right outside a concentration camp, and they're too busy on their schedule to go there. And the interesting thing, there are two interesting things about that that I don't know if I'm going on too much on
no,
that.
No, it's fascinating. Go ahead.
The New York Times reviewer, who loved some elements of the book, was really put out by that. He said, well, at least we would have gone there and prayed. And the interesting thing about it is that that same year after the publication of it, some people started planning the Holocaust Museum. And prior to that time, the Holocaust had been pretty much an element of silence. Nobody had dealt with it. So I kind of like to think perhaps that that someone may have seen that review or may have seen the book and said, yeah, you know, maybe this is a problem that we need to be dealing with. And another element of it, which is related to the Holocaust, there was a bookstore in the town. And it had this enormous collection of Judaica, but people didn't pay much attention to it. And it was owned by a Jewish Indian. I mention that because I use that in subsequent novels. And the bookstore burned, and nobody paid much attention to it. And then ultimately, they decided they would create some new volumes to substitute for it. Yes. And it is actually a metaphor for the Holocaust itself. And it does inform other books, as I can tell you about. So in any way, that's a little bit of the overview of it. It's a lot of it is quite amusing. It's the character, the narrator, who is a narrator in two other of my novels, is a whimsical person. He's very kind of analytical about society, and he's very amusing as an individual. So in any event, that kind of gives you an overview of Lost and Found.
The book receiving excellent reviews. It's Lost and Found by Sheldon Green. Green is G-R-E-E-N-E. You'll find the book, of course, at Amazon, the usual places. Sheldon's website as well will give you information, as will Amazon, on the other books that he's written. Sheldon Green with an E, sheldongreen.com. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and you can link on directly to his website, get all the information. I mentioned very briefly this amazing career that you've had. Started early, and you've been very productive throughout your entire career. When did you realize you had this knack, this talent for creative writing? When did that begin?
It's an interesting question. I think I started creative writing in law school. It was kind of a digression because law was very, very concrete and very analytical. Yes. And empirical. And so for me, the opportunity to write was a way of reaching to another dimension of of my life and my persona. And so the interesting aspect of that is that I think from my perspective, it's a question of creating a world separate from the world, which is difficult to control. And I kind of always likened it to having some kind of an omniscient or a God complex that you could create a whole universe and
yes.
Everything that you wanted it to be would be the way it turns out, with an opening and a closure and a development. So essentially that's how it happened. And there's a mystical element of creative writing, at least for me. And I don't really understand how it happens, except that, we've got this brain, which has 10 to the to zero, in other words, literally a trillion neurons in it. And that thing is the repository of all of your cumulative experiences. And somehow or other, it's creating some new area of reality,
yes.
In your imagination. And so I'm kind of rambling on the subject, but it kind of gives you a sense of what creative writing means to me.
Well, it's just
a little bit like breathing, actually.
Well, in such a diverse career, I'm sure you've seen a number of situations. You've met a number of interesting people that are stored in that memory, that as you're writing and creating Sheldon's world, as you say, where you escape and you create this world, you're able to draw back consciously or subconsciously. Do you have a process as you're writing? Is there a routine that you go through, a structure?
Yeah, I wouldn't characterize it rather as a routine, because I'm kind of anti-routine. I like to be very spontaneous about everything. But it starts with a seed, some idea. I can give you an illustration, perhaps.
Yes.
That Judy and I, my wife, were in southern Mexico, and we went to Palenque, which is a very elaborate archaeological site. And there is a bas-relief, which is known as the Cross Temple of Palenque. And it's quite astonishing. If a Christian looked at it, they would see that somehow or other, there were Christian missionaries here who informed the religion. And it's known actually as the Cross Temple of Palenque. And so it got me going, because I've always looked at mythology and always looked at genealogy and ethnology and looked between the cracks, what we know and what we would anticipate from what we know. And I said, that must be confirmation of Christian missionaries coming to the New World and influencing the culture, and but at the same time synthesizing the Christianity into their existing culture. And then I began to think about, well, I know I'd read about King Solomon's sailors going circumnavigating after, and maybe they came across. And so in any event, I began to think, what about if there were Jewish Indians who came, you know, and ultimately fused their culture. And that really was the nexus for the Seed Apple, in which Jewish Indians had not only participated in the building of the culture, but ultimately migrated to the north and settled in a an area after the implosion of the existing culture of the Mayans, and settled in a kind of a fictitious Palm Springs. And so then that's the nexus of the idea, and it starts that way, and then ultimately it kind of expands, and I start putting things on it, developing characters. I do, in where I've got a historic basis, I do very fastidious research so that the everything is really almost as if a historian were writing it and describing it. And then ultimately, when it's all together, it sort of works by itself. I mean, this is the magical side of it. After I've sort of gotten the concept for for characters, and kind of given an outline of what they're like and how they interact, the thing just suddenly takes on its own life, and I become kind of the medium for the narrative, and I can just sit and let the characters evolve and evolve themselves.
It's amazing. You can.
I don't know if other writers have that experience, but it is kind of a remarkable experience that you've created an internal reality, and then suddenly it's there on an internal stage, and you just become the vehicle to put it down on paper.
Some talk about that, and I think it's when you get to the point where you're really good at what you do, and you develop these characters and the situation, and all of a sudden you've done such a nice job in developing them. They're talking back to you and guiding you through where you're going with the storyline. The book that Sheldon mentioned, The Seed Apple, is available if you go to his website, SheldonGreene, GREENE.com. All of his books, and we'll mention those before we wrap up the program today. Talk about that intersection between research, which you talk about doing, and then your imagination. How difficult is it to balance that? Maybe your imagination's going somewhere that it's not supported by research. What's that like, balancing that?
For me, it isn't a problem because, I mean, I'm really quite obsessive about if I'm dealing with a novel that has a historic foundation, and I've dealt with that, for example, with The Pursuit of Happiness is a novel set in the Revolutionary War. And so the character, principal character, Joshua Rutledge, is an artist, and he's a Quaker from Philadelphia. So I'm dealing, initially he's recruited by Washington in Valley Forge to scope out Trenton in advance of the famous crossing the Delaware and the Christmas Eve attack on Trenton. And then he's recruited subsequently to go to the Caribbean to find an enormous number of arms that have been sent to the revolution by the French king and Beaumarchais, the French playwright, that have gone amiss, awry. And so then he actually has to go there, locate them, find somebody to ship them back, and ultimately goes down there again actually retrieve them in the context of a slave rebellion. So I give you all of these little anecdotes because every one of them has a factual basis. And in with respect to the facts, I just did all the research so that if you were to look at it from a historic standpoint, they would be extremely accurate. And the intersection This kind of flows naturally. If you're, for me, if I'm going to talk about Valley Forge, and if I'm going to talk about the crossing of the Delaware and Trenton, I'm going to use all the historic information so that it becomes a very accurate description. And I don't really see any conflict whatsoever, because I've already kind of I know where I'm going with the novel, and I know what I have to do to create that image that is accurate on which the principal character is functioning.
Sheldon Green is our guest on the program. His newest book is Lost and Found. You'll find the book at Amazon. You can order it at Sheldon's website, Sheldon Green, GREENE.com. Time going by so quickly. I want to mention a couple of the other books at the end. Before I get there, as you're talking, are there sort of underlying themes or symbolism that you have in your books?
Yeah, definitely. And I use an awful lot of different issues. For example, one of the themes in another book, Burnt Umber, is, well, it's set in the 20th century, and so it concerns the role of two real artists, Franz Marc and a lesser known but well-known artist who was a Berkeley professor, Harold Paris. And in that book, the principal theme that I was exploring and developing is the relationship between narcissism and creativity and the empowerment of women over the 20th century. Because the book really spans the 20th century between the two artists, so that it starts in pre-war, pre-World War I Munich. It goes into World War I. It comes after the war, post-war, and then it jumps over to the Harold Paris side of the book, and it moves from World War II to post-war Paris, and spends most of its time in Berkeley during the Vietnam era. So that is the principal. Those are the principal issues that I'm exploring in that, because along these two narcissistic artists who I tie together are seven women. And you start with a very conventional early 19th century bourgeois woman, and you end up in Berkeley with a fully emancipated African American civil rights person. And so betwixt and between, you
Yes.
see the way in which women have managed to empower themselves collectively over this century. So that's one of the themes that I explored in that book. And another book, for example, deals with the question of trust, and that's, I can get into that, but the fact is that's a book that is set in the 50 years from now after the dissolution of the United States, and it's in California, and California is an independent country after a protracted
Wow.
drought and after a pandemic, as a matter of fact. And that question, is the entire book, as it's kind of a road
Yes.
book, a little bit like Candide. Trust is the issue that I'm exploring. And so there are a number of themes. Each time I'm writing on something, I'm starting with a common theme. One of them, actually, The End of Ideology. It's a novel called Prodigal Sons that spans World War II and then is in post-war Germany, where most of it takes place. And it's based upon in a retelling of the Götterdämmerung, which is the Wagnerian opera. And that plays very well, because the whole idea about the book is how ideology really pollutes the world. And if you were to eliminate it, you would have a better, kind of a better
Oh,
way in which people
yes.
interrelate.
All of
Anyhow,
these books are available on Sheldon's website. Seven very well received books. The newest one is available now, Lost and Found, sheldongreen.com, Green with an E. A minute or so left. I'd like you, if you would, please, maybe to read a couple of passages from The Love Effect, which is a recent book published September of last year. And we'll sort of close the program with that. And as you're getting ready for that, I'll remind you once again that Sheldon Greene, G-R-E-E-N-E, his website, sheldongreene.com. Amazon, of course, has not only this book, Lost and Found, The Love Effect, he's going to read from here shortly, but all of his books. And go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and pursue them as well. Sheldon, if you would give us a little example from The Love Effect.
Thank you. It's really delight for me to do that. So this is the way it starts. The book, just to tell you just a little bit about it, it's I return to the Bolton, which is the same place as Lost and Found. It's a sequel. And the book deals with the establishment of a school in a retirement center, which didn't have very many retired people left. And they retain a Russian refugee to be the director of the school. And he shakes things up in a way that is both disruptive and at the same time transcendentally healing for the society, for the country, or the community. So in any event, I'll just read you a few sections of it.
Please.
This begins, Noodleman started it. "I want Isaac to have a real education," he said, looking around at the synagogue board with his wise hound's eyes. Those were the words that began it all. Just 8 words, a few sounds tossed into the air of the boardroom. But words have power. They can make people kill, make them fall in love, even buy appliances they don't need. And then here we have, he's engaging, this is all in the narrator's words and verse. There we were, the 5 old folks and me, seated at the heavy black oak dining table in the cavernous dining hall with its peaked roof supported by the massive cross beams. Through the tall Gothic windows on both sides of the hall, I could see bibulous white clouds and the tops of old chestnut trees swaying in the autumn wind like praying Jews. It was cold in the vast room, a cold that had been stored for years, and we seemed so fragile and insignificant, as if the room had been designed for Goliath. And here is, he's commenting on life. Life is an endless paper chain of compromises, you could say. As children, we equate our aspirations with what is fair. But life is not always fair, any more than we, you and me, always do the right thing, making the right choice when we have a choice, and meeting the expectations of people who depend on us. Life comes at you like a drunk driver. It's nothing you planned. And if you had thought it was going to happen, you would have gotten out of the way.
It just, you can see why Sheldon is such a talented writer, along with so many other aspects. We could do programs just talking about your legal career, your business career, so much that you've done, and just so distinguished as a writer. And all of these books are available at, find them at Amazon, also at Sheldon's website. And the newest book is Lost and Found. The website is Sheldon Greene, G-R-E-E-N-E.com. Sheldon, the time has gone by way too quickly. It's been such fun having you on the program. Hopefully we can do this again. Thank you for spending some time with us today, and what a talent. What are you working on? 30 seconds here. I want to find out what else you're working on.
Yeah, well, a couple of novels that haven't been published, and one, Tamar, is one of the quartet, you know, the four books, 3 of which are in Mendel's name and narrated by him. And the other one is actually the first novel that I wrote many, many years ago, and it was never published. And it's set in Israel before the Six-Day War, and it actually deals with Israel's nuclear program.
Oh, fascinating.
So I'm revising that, and we'll see if anybody picks it up. The Tamar is out there for consideration right now, and some
perfect.
I guess a couple of publishers are interested in it.
Well, good luck with that. In all of these books, you can follow Sheldon and get information on the published books. Find out about the ones that will be coming out shortly at his website, sheldongreen.com. Sheldon, a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure for me as well.
Time went by too quickly. A lot of fun having you here. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again. It's Sheldon Green, our guest on the program.
My pleasure.
Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and we're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.